Welcome to Build. Hi there, I'm Hem Chander. I am a senior software engineering manager here at Microsoft, working on the Visual Studio IDE team. During this talk on writing Visual Studio extensions, I'm going to sort of give you an overview of how to get started, some tips and tricks along the way, and by the end of the talk, I hope that you'll have enough under your belt to go back and start building extensions for Visual Studio. With that, the agenda for this talk is I'm going to start with a very basic extension and walk you through the process of understanding what goes into the extension. Then we'll go about publishing the extension. And as we go down the road, we'll cover different aspects of Visual Studio extensibility fundamentals like MEF, VS packages, and whatnot, and towards the end, we'll put it all together to sort of get a sense of what we have accomplished and what more you could actually accomplish in terms of building extensions for Visual Studio. Visual Studio as such is very powerful and extensible. There's tons of functionality in there. Visual Studio comes with so much functionality that sometimes I wonder whether we added too much in there. And what would you do? But then I just step back and then say, what would you do if some of the functionality does not even exist, right? For example, if I had a Swiss Army knife and I needed to use a lighter to start the flame or a hammer to break a wall, something like that, right? Am I not missing some functionality? Because obviously I cannot use the Swiss Army knife to break a wall. So that's the sort of trade-off we make wherein when we build a feature and add functionality to VS, we look at it and say, is this something that extension author can extend? And if an extension author can extend it, then probably we'll think a little bit more before we add that functionality to VS. But at times, we also realize that some functionality cannot be added by an extension author at all, right? Then we go about adding the functionality to VS. So there is a reason why there's tons of functionality in there. There's a method to the madness, right? And Visual Studio, given that it has so much functionality in there, it's completely configurable. Like a lot of things are configurable. For example, in this case, I'm using the light theme. If I wanted to change the theme for Visual Studio, I would go about and say, search for theme in the quick launch. Dialog there, and then that pulls up the tools options window, and then right now I'm using blue. I could go change it to dark theme, and voila, I'm using dark theme now. For the purpose of this demo, I'm going to continue using light theme because it sort of sits well with the rest of the slide deck. I'm going to use the blue theme rather. So Visual Studio, like this is just an example of how configurable Visual Studio is, but then there is a reason why it's still extensible. While there is lots of functionality that's configurable, there might still be places wherein you might realize that whatever comes in the box, a standard configuration option, might not be good enough for you. And you could change Visual Studio behavior for that using code or XML files, basically, right? So with that, let's jump into our first demo. It's going to be a very simple V6 project. So for that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a file new project that pulls in the new project dialog box. And in there I'm on the extensibility node. This extensibility node exists right now because I had installed VS SDK for the demo purposes, and I select the V6 project. Now I'm talking V6, but what is V6? V6 is a file that gets generated from a V6 project. That's what we are doing right now. The V6 file is a unit of deployment for a Visual Studio extension, right? Visual Studio will recognize a V6 extension and install the contents of the file to the right location. A V6 file is basically a zip file that uses open packaging convention, and you can rename the .v6 extension to .zip, and you can see the contents of the zip file. Basically, I'm using any zip explorer like Windows File Explorer even. If you ask me what V6 stands for, well, I would say it's Visual Studio Installer for Extensions. So now going back to our project that just got created, you see that it doesn't have many references at all, and it just has a V6 manifest, and we are right now in the manifest designer. There are a few fields in here that I would like to take some time to walk you through. right? The first one is the product name. This is what shows up when someone installs this extension, right? When you go into extensions and updates dialog box, the names that you see in here, these are the extensions that are installed for me. The names in here are picked from the product name that was specified by that specific extension author. The author name by default gets pulled in from the sign-in information that I used to sign into Visual Studio. The product ID is sort of by default combination of product name and author name and then a GUID. You can also you'll also have to specify a version. When you update your extension and upload it to Gallery, you'll keep changing the version number so that your customers who are using your V6 get updated versions. There is a description and whatnot. You can also provide license as well. It's in the form of an RTF file. So for our extension, I'm going to provide a license file, right? And then, now let's look at install targets and what that means. So install targets here, what it's saying is this V6 installs on 14.0 version of Visual Studio, targets Visual Studio 14.0, which is basically Visual Studio 2015. And then it also says that it targets Pro. Let us look at all the other possible options of the product identifier. There are a bunch of options in here. Now, what do each of these mean? Before we understand what each of these mean, we'll have to take a small detour to understand the Visual Studio SKU model. Basically, Visual Studio SKU model is a Russian doll model. Integrated shell is the smallest doll in there. What ships with Visual Studio Integrated Shell is the integrated development environment, the debugger, and source control integration. It does not have any programming language included with it. And this is usually used by extenders who want to sort of add their own programming language and have their own custom Visual Studio environment. So if you were to build an extension that targets Integrated Shell, then your extension would be installed not only on the regular Visual Studio SKUs, but by all the other extenders who might have built their own SKU of Visual Studio using Integrated Shell, right? And on top of Visual Studio Integrated Shell, you have Express SKUs and the Community SKU. The Express SKU does not have third-party extensibility support. Community SKU is a free SKU of Visual Studio that does have support for extensibility. The Express SKUs are for specific targeted scenarios like web development or Windows desktop application development. The Pros and Enterprise SKUs are paid SKUs that are on top of Community SKU. So now, if you were to have your extension target Community, what that means is your extension would install on Community, Professional, and Enterprise SKUs. If you said your extension just targets Pro, then it will install on Pro and Enterprise, basically. It won't install on Community. So with that overview, now let us jump on to dependencies. You can specify dependencies for your extension as well. By default, what your V6 manifest is saying here is it requires .NET 4.5 or higher. You can add your own dependency as well, and you could say, I want to specify dependency from something that's already installed on this machine, and you could probably pick something like, well, how about code analysis, right? And what you're saying here is, well, as long as I have code analysis extension versions from 14.0 to 15.0, basically, if 15.0 were installed, then this extension would not install anything which is 14.0 or higher, basically major version of 14.0. Then this extension should be installable. Let's specify that. All right. And now, the other piece that I wanted to sort of touch upon is with the install targets. Going back to the install targets, there's something that I wanted to touch upon that I did not cover. Are these two check boxes, basically, right? By default, a V6 is installed for just the user who's initiating the install. It is per user. If, however, you want the V6 to be installed by all the users that use the machine, then you would check this box, right? This is mostly used by extensions that install a lot of productivity features, have machine-wide licensing associated with them, And users typically have paid some sizable amount of money to buy those features and expect those features to be tied to Visual Studio and be available to all the users that use the machine, basically. And there is this another checkbox in here, which essentially is used in a different sort of a scenario, basically. So for V6, basically, package is installed by V6 installer. When you install Visual Studio, it registers V6 installer as the default installer for .v6 files, right? When a user double clicks a .v6 file, then that's what the V6 installer gets launched, and that's the one that extracts the package to a certain location and hooks it up so that Visual Studio consumes and surfaces the functionality that's provided in the V6 package, right? So when you're when in certain situations you might want to actually, like if you are an extension author who has functionality which is not just contained within the V6, for example, you are writing a service which monitors the changes that the developer is making to the code, and it's probably a Windows service maybe that gets installed, and V6 cannot install anything outside of a certain folder. So what you would do then is you would package your V6 into the MSI package that not only does the install of the V6, but also actually does this additional installation logic. And then you mark your V6 as installed by Windows installer so that it doesn't get surfaced into the extensions updates dialog box as something that can be uninstalled, right? So now, with that sort of an overview, let us go about and build the solution, and you'll see that it will end up generating a V6 package, and then what we'll do is we'll inspect the V6 package and what's inside of it. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the location, I'm going to rename the V6 to be a zip, and then we can go look at the V6 package and its contents, right? You can see that the license file is included, then there is the extension V6 manifest that's included. To be able to install this guy, I'm going to rename it back, and I'm going to just double click. Okay, and I can also view the log, right? The log obviously tells me that, yeah, this guy references the code analysis extension, and also that this guy, that this package had a dependency on .NET framework, it targets Pro, you know, all the details that we authored into the V6, and also it says that it was installed to this location. Which happens to be this. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to navigate to that location. And then we'll see that it just extracted the contents of the V6, which was the manifest and the RTF file. That's about it. Right. All right. That's all goodness. Now you might be wondering, where did it, like how did we decide, how did the V6 installer decide to install to this location, basically, right? So that's something that once again is specified in a package def file. We'll talk about package def files in a minute, but let's go look at the package def file that I'm referring to here. It's in Visual Studio 14.0, Common 7 IDE. The package def file that I'm talking about is devn.pkgdef, and more specifically, there are a few things that I want you to make note of. The extensions that are installed for all users go to the location that I've highlighted here. This root folder happens to be program files, Visual Studio 14.0, whatever version of Visual Studio, basically, Common 7 IDE extensions. And the per user extensions go to local app data, the location that we looked at basically, right? The local app data, Microsoft, Visual Studio 14.0, and then the extensions location. Then the registry route, this is another thing that also is interesting for you to keep in mind. This is HKCU software, Microsoft Visual Studio 14.0. That's where all of Visual Studio's config and extension information and a lot of information specific to Visual Studio is stored. So 14.0 and 14.0 config are the places where Visual Studio registry information specific to that instance of Visual Studio is stored at. So that's also something that's picked up from Devenv PKG Dev. So now, let's go back in here. Let's restart Visual Studio to actually see the extension show up. Though it doesn't do anything meaningful, we can still see it listed in extensions updates dialog box. The reason why I had to restart Visual Studio is because the extension was actually installed out of proc and we maintain a cache basically, right? And the cache doesn't get refreshed. So we had to restart VS for that reason. And you can see that the extension was installed. In fact, let me go ahead and install the extension because I want to do something else as well, which is to actually go publish to the gallery. I was already signed into gallery, so I just signed out to show you the complete walkthrough. So you can go sign in using your live ID. All right. And then you can upload an extension. And in my case, the point of this walkthrough is to sort of give you an idea of how simple it is for you to upload an extension once you have it. So you pick, I just gave the extension that we just built. It's pretty much a dummy extension, does nothing much. I hope you don't upload dummy extensions out there, extensions which have meaningful functionality. And I'm going to delete this extension right after the demo, so I'm going to give it some description which is not probably very meaningful here. But the reason why I'm giving this is so that you sort of see the process here, that's all. All right. So it's going about saving, it's not published yet. I'm going to hit publish. Right, and then voila, it's published. Now let me go check if it's actually published from within VS. Right, I'm going to go to the online tab to search for the extensions in the gallery. Maybe I will just use V6 as my search string to find it. And sure enough, it's there. It's something that I created obviously just now. So okay, fine, I'll download it and yep, I get my extension. And the EULA for it, all right, and it installed all fine. And it shows up, sure enough, it shows up in our install list as well. Cool. I'm going to uninstall it for now. And now let us get back to our slide to sort of wrap up our first tiny little demo here. So what we did so far is we talked about what's in the V6 package manifest. We did the publishing. What we did not do is actually talk about the debugging and experimental instance. So let me go back. The same project, and then we'll look at debugging specifically. So let's look at the debug properties for this project. So sure enough, it says the action when you hit debug is to start an external program, apparently. Okay. And then it says run devin.exe. Well, that's Visual Studio. So it says just launch Visual Studio to run my extension project. Makes sense, because you want the extension lives within Visual Studio, so you want to run Visual Studio. That makes sense. The next thing is there's a command line argument as well that's applied, which happens to be root suffix exp. What this says is experimental instance is what this is saying. So what's experimental instance? Let's sort of take a moment to understand that and why that even exists. An experimental instance of Visual Studio is basically it uses a different registry hive. In our case, when we were looking at the, if you remember, we were looking at the registry hive earlier. So the experimental instance has its own hive. And the point of this isolation, not only does it have a hive of its own, the extensions also get installed to a different location from the standard instance of Visual Studio. The point of this isolation is so that your development environment is distinctly separate from your debug environment, so that if you had any extensions which you're developing which are not good enough, then that doesn't pollute your development environment and sort of get you into bad situations. The other piece that you want to also make note of is all the extensions that you are debugging run within the same experimental instance. So if you were building 10 different extensions, and then all 10 of them will show in this same experimental instance in itself. So with that, let's actually see how the debug experience for ArGuy actually looks like. So let's say start debugging. And then it will go about starting Visual Studio, the experimental instance of Visual Studio. Right. Not only does it start the experimental instance of Visual Studio, it also goes about it also makes sure that this experimental instance of Visual Studio has your extension installed. So the one thing that you'll see is the title has experimental instance in here. Your regular Visual Studio obviously does not have that in the title. And then if you went and looked at extensions and updates, you will see V6 Project 1 installed in here, which was not the case for the standard instance. So let's close this guy. And go back to our slide deck and sort of summarize what we covered so far, right? So we covered the V6 package manifest, what goes into a V6 package, how easy and simple it is for you to publish a package. We also looked at the experimental instance and how that works as well. The one little tidbit that might also be useful eventually is looking at what happens, the specific thing that one of the specific things that happens when you're building a V6 project, which is, for that we'll have to look at the CSproj associated for this project. And then the one thing that I wanted to talk about are the VSSDK targets. So your extensibility project imports the VSSDK targets. Now, what does the targets file actually contain? Let's go look up the targets file to get a sense of what's in there. So the targets file has a bunch of tasks. If you are aware of MS Build architecture, you probably understand what tasks do. I'm not going to get into the details of MS Build architecture and whatnot. Here, what the tasks file has done is it defines a bunch of tasks. And you'll notice that as part of building a V6 project, it gets zipped up. The manifest gets validated. And the extension gets uninstalled and installed back. And so it's some useful source of information for you to go look at. And if you're finding something that's unique to a V6 project build process, then probably this is a place for you to start looking at. All right, so with that, what I'm going to do now is sort of switch gears and actually start adding some meaningful functionality to our project. So what we'll do is we'll go about and add new item. And then what we are going to do is add a new extensibility item and add editor margin. So what does this do? Basically, this template, like what is described here, right, creates a bare bones editor margin that places a green box across the bottom of the editor's viewport. So that's what this guy does. So let's go about adding the editor margin, and you'll see that the template ended up adding a bunch of references, right? Mostly to import the interfaces and start using the interfaces that are exposed by the editor. And then it added a couple of classes in here. So the editor margin one .cs has a constructor. What the constructor does is basically it creates a label which sets the background as light green and adds a text to it. Okay, now going to the editor margin one factory CS, it has a method which creates a margin. The most interesting piece with this class is actually the fact that it has a bunch of attributes in here, and that's what I think is most interesting for me in here. And the one of the attributes here is the export attribute. So to get a sense of what these attributes mean and whatnot, we'll have to look at MEF, the Managed Extensibility Framework. But before that, let us just go about build this project and run it to see the sort of functionality that it implements. Okay, so we are in the experimental instance. I'm just going to create a simple console application so that we have a file, and then we can look at the editor margin once we open that file. It's taking a while. All right, so you see that it's functional. Yes, it does something by adding editor margin, has some text here, and then has a green background for it. All right, so let's close this guy and then start talking about what is MEF. So MEF is Managed Extensibility Framework. Right, it enables you to build extensible applications wherein extending the application would be as simple as dropping a bunch of binaries to a location, and then Visual Studio would just pick up the binaries and then include it and surface the functionality that your extension implements into VS, basically, right? So that's sort of the capability, the powerful capability of extensibility that MEF provides. Right, and this Managed Extensibility Framework actually ships with .NET Framework, and you'll need System.ComponentModel namespace is where the functionality for MEF is actually surfaced. So let's sort of walk through a typical extensibility scenario, right? In here, we have an application and a couple of extensions, right? Extension A and extension B. Extension A has a tool window. And then the application could say, well, I need tool windows. Extension B has a menu, and it says, I got a menu. And then the application could say, well, I need menus, and it starts consuming those menus. In addition to that, not only do these extensions actually surface the functionality, they probably will also need some functionality. Like extension A might say, I need a menu service, and the application could say, I got a menu service, here you go, and gives that menu service back to the extension. And extension goes about using that. And for all practical purposes, maybe some of the functionality of menu service is a result of the help that extension B provided by actually implementing a menu, right? So similarly, extension B could say, I need a tool window service, and then the application could say, I got a tool window service, here you go, use it. right? So that's sort of the model wherein the extensions actually use some functionality within the application, and they also provide some functionality to the application. So to sort of get these concepts a little bit more a concrete understanding of these concepts, let's start looking at a demo project that I have. Okay, so this demo project basically does something similar to what we talked on the slide deck, right? It has defined a bunch of interfaces, a tool window interface, a menu interface, and then it also defines the menu service and tool window service, right? And then the program CS essentially has a class, some tool window, which implements the tool window interface, the application, which keeps track of all the tool windows, right? And then it provides something to query the window given a name. And then there is a menu service, which implements the iMenu service. And then eventually there is this main method, which sort of hooks up the tool window, the application, and menu service together by sort of saying the application keeps track of all the tool windows, right? The menus, the tool window gets a menu service in this manner, and that's that. And then this is essentially to sort of prove that, well, now everything's hooked up, right? So let us run this to see the output, right? So yep, there is a tool window that got created, and then there is a menu service that got created. Okay, fine. But now let us run through a hypothetical situation here, right? Now if somehow there is a requirement to add another tool window, then what would you do? You would go about saying, well, tool window 2, right, is what you do, and then you start listing the tool window 2, right, in here. So a lot of ugliness here once you start extending, because now you have to not only do you add this additional functionality, but also actually have to change your application code to accomplish that. Now, fine, if you controlled all of your code, then maybe that's still fine, recompile is fine. But how about if you wanted your application to be extensible, right? Then you would, what would you do in the case when some extension author wants to hook up to you and provide a tool window? Well, you have to invent your own extensibility mechanism on how the application author registers their tool windows and where you read those tool windows from, right? That's sort of the problem that basically MEF tried to solve, and solve in a very elegant manner using reflection and .NET reflection and whatnot. So to see all of that in action, let's go about using MEF in our example and sort of give you an overview of how simple that actually ends up looking. Okay, so I had a reference to the component model composition, all right, and then I'll add a few usings. And then we'll also use reflection as well eventually. So we added a few usings that will pull in a few types for us. And then I'm going to say the sum tool window basically exports iTool window. So how do I specify that? By saying export type of iTool iTool window. If I did not specify a type of iTool window, then by default it would end up exporting some tool window, the class, but that's not what I want. I want to export the interface. And then the class also actually needs the menu service, right? So I'm going to say I need a type of a menu service, right? So that MEF now knows that, okay, this is another dependency that needs to be satisfied. The application imports many tool windows, not just one. So what we will have to do then is use the import many attribute and say that it imports many tool windows, okay. And then the menu service obviously exports type of iMenu service, and then it imports many menus. And then, so we have added a few exports and imports to sort of declaratively specify the dependencies. What I'm going to do is I'm going to remove all of the composition, homemade composition, and actually start using MEF API style compose. I'm going to start off by creating a catalog. And the catalog is an assembly catalog built from types that are defined in the executing assembly, the current assembly, right? The current assembly that we are building. And then I'm going to create a container for this catalog. And then I'm going to say compose the parts for the application. And then let's see if we can resolve this compile error as well. Okay, I typed the wrong key there, and that's okay. All right. Application obviously has a get window. So I'm going to get the window using the name. Some tool window is what I specified as the name, right? In here. So I'm going to use that. And that's that. So now let us sort of take a moment to sort of understand what's going on here in these few lines of code, right? When we are building the assembly catalog, what the assembly catalog class in here is doing is it's going about enumerating all the types, methods, fields that has export or import attributes defined on it, and then creates a collection of composable parts. What's a composable part? It's a composable unit in MEF, basically, right? In other words, like a composable part holds information regarding either an import or an export unit. And then when we called composition container on the catalog, what happened was the composition container gets the exports from the catalog, right? And then the exports are mapped to the imports once we do the compose parts, So that's the matchmaking process essentially happens when you do the compose parts, and when all the dependencies are satisfied, well, this succeeds basically, right? And then we now have access to the tool window as well. To sort of also look at another fun thing with MEF, let's go about enumerating all the parts in our catalog. So what we are going to do is we are going to look at all the export definitions, and then we are going to just print all of them. Okay. So let's okay, there was a build failure, so I probably missed something. Uh-huh. Tool window does not have menu service. So for now, let us comment this out. We can get to it in a bit. The point that I wanted to show was actually the tool window in itself can be, we can access the tool window from the application, which is the case here. And we were able to enumerate the exports as well. For time purposes, I'm going to keep rolling with our current talk. So far, if remember, we talked about the extension needing a menu service and the application saying that, well, I got a menu service. Well, that translates to sort of import and export from MEF terminology, right? So everything is a part from a MEF standpoint. Your extensions are MEF parts, and your applications is a part. Everything is a part. So now let us take a moment to talk about what we have covered so far with regards to MEF. When we are dealing with MEF, we need to understand that parts export something or import something, right? Then there is a composition that puts it all together. To accomplish that, there is a catalog that keeps track of all the providers of functionality. There is a container that plays the role of matchmaker, right, by finding exports and satisfies the imports. We looked at the assembly catalog in this example. There are other catalogs as well, like the directory catalog, which is sort of what gets used when you want to throw in your extensions to a directory location. Then you basically have a directory catalog, and the catalog gets built based on all the assemblies that are in that specific directory that you're looking at. There are also other advanced concepts like lazy imports and specifying metadata on your parts as well that have not covered. Those are for your own study at some point of time. But the point for me here was to actually give you an overview of MEF. Right. So why does Visual Studio use MEF? To make its own extensibility, store is simple by encouraging extension authors, create partitioned and modular pieces of functionality. As we have seen, MEF brings that ability to compose functionality easily and encourages designing and implementing completely decoupled pieces of software, right? Which is ideal from an extensibility standpoint. These design patterns make it possible to create maintainable software in the long run. So now let us go back to our editor margin example. Switch over to that, and then start looking at the attributes the MIF specific attributes. Right. In here, what we are saying is that it's saying that, well, this class exports the IWPF text view margin provider, right? And when the editor obviously imports all the entities, all the parts that specify a margin provider, and then what it does based on that is then it goes about creating margin on those providers. And when that happens, our extension actually got the opportunity to add the background and text, right? And also there was another attribute, a few attributes that are of interest here that the editor cares about, right? We specified that this is a content type, this is applicable for a content type text. We also specified that this is applicable for bottom margin only, right? And we also gave it a name as well up here. That's the additional metadata that we also provided. So I wanted to also cover a couple of things that are specific to Visual Studio's usage of MIF. So what Visual Studio does is when you use a V6 package to install an extension, right? V6 installer comes along, it installs the package to the extensions folder, basically extracts the package to the extensions folder, right? And then when sets it up so that on subsequent restart, Visual Studio understands that an extension was installed. And then Visual Studio will go about scanning the extensions folder. And when it does that, it obviously calls the compose parts to build a MIF graph. And after that, what it also does is it makes sure that it updates its own cache of extensions, and the MIF cache that it keeps. The point of the cache is so that it doesn't scan the extensions folder all the time on every start of VS. It does that only when an extension was installed previously, right? So that's sort of something that is sort of unique to how Visual Studio manages MIF-based extensions. Switching gears, we are going to look at Visual Studio packages and how that works. To get started, what we'll do is we'll add a menu item and a command that gets executed when the user clicks on a menu item. In the process, I hope to provide you an overview of VS extensibility concepts like package citing, package registration, command routing. That will help you when you look at creating a VS package yourself. At a high level, VS package is a means for an extension author to provide common extensibility objects in a container that is deployed and licensed as a single entity, basically. Functionality surfaced by a VS package can be used by other objects in the same package or in another package. In terms of types of things that you could do, you could write your own language service, and you would provide that in a VS package. Designers could be VS packages. Visual Studio's editor itself is a VS package. Then project systems or UI elements like menu and tool windows, those also would be in VS packages, right? So with that, let us transition to a simple demo where we'll add a menu command. So back to our demo project that we've been using so far, we are going to continue and add a new extensibility item. And we are going to add a custom command. And we'll see that there are a bunch of references that will be added and a few files that will be added as a result of this. So the references that are added here, you'll see that there are a shell immutable and shell interop assemblies that were added. We need those for some core interoperability types for shell interfaces, structures, and classes, and for package registration attributes. Now let us look at the source code that was added as a result of this. So let's look at command one package.cs, right? You'll see that it has a few attributes, and then the package itself inherits from Microsoft Visual Studio shell.package, right? And you'll notice that there is a comment here in the constructor. So that's something of worth making note of. So what it's saying here is it tells us that we can place initialization, what sort of initialization code can go in here and what cannot. And it says that it talks about something called package citing, right? So what does, right here, right? And what does package citing mean? That's something that I would want to take a moment to talk about. When we develop a package, it is modular unit of functionality, right? When it is loaded in Visual Studio, it becomes part of Visual Studio in itself. So what does that mean? If you're developing something which is a module of its own, like a regular assembly module that gets loaded by a regular application, then the application just uses the functionality that's provided by the DLL. It's unlikely that the DLL uses some of the functionality that's in the application. That's the distinction between the VS package and the regular modules. When you build a VS package, not only does VS use the functionality that's surfaced by that VS package, but VS package in itself also has the ability to consume and use the functionality that is in VS and also from other VS packages as well. So what package citing does here essentially is that when the package is, after the package is cited, it essentially becomes part of Visual Studio. Before it is cited, that does not happen. So for the package to be cited, you should actually have implemented the IVS package interface. That's something that we get for free here because we just inherited from the package class. And Visual Studio eventually calls as per initialize as well after the package is cited. And so at this point, we can actually, when the initialize method is called, we can actually start using some of the services that are part of Visual Studio. So let's go take a look at the command one initialize because that's what gets called in our initialize method for the command one package. And eventually you will see that the constructor gets called and the constructor actually uses a shell service, menu command service. So yeah, we are able to actually access VS from within our package, some of the services from VS. And what it does here is pretty minimal, right? What it does is it adds the command, and the command was essentially a command ID and the event handler, and then it adds that to the command service so that no command service knows when a user executes a specific command to call this event handler, basically, right? So that's what has happened. So now let us look at another piece of information, right, by going back to the command one package. All right. So in here, we looked at this package registration attribute. Now, what this package registration attribute does what it is saying in here is that, well, the resources for this DLL are not in satellite DLLs, it is in the same DLL. There are other things that you can specify using the package registration attribute, things like whether this package can be loaded in the background in a different thread or not. The install product registration attribute, basically you use that to provide information so that it shows up in the help about dialog box. The other useful one for you to sort of know is provide menu resource. What this guy says is, well, the menu resources that are built from the VSCT file, now what is a VSCT file? We'll get to that in a minute. That are built from the VSCT file should be in a resource named menus.ctmenu, and here's the version of the resource. The point of versioning the resource is essentially for the Visual Studio caching so that Visual Studio remains performant and doesn't have to look up the resources all the time, every time VS is loaded, but only when actually the version changes, right? So that's goodness from a performance standpoint. So now going to the VSCT file itself, what is the VSCT file? Well, it's a command table. What's in it? Let's start by looking at line by line, sort of. There is this stdidcmd.h, and what does that file actually have? It has the command IDs for all the menus and editor commands. So that's defined in there. And for if you were interested in looking up at all the command ID information, that's the header file for you to go look at. The other important element for you to pay attention to is sort of the commands node. The commands are associated with a package, basically, right? Package identified uniquely by a GUID, right? And that's what's specified here. And that GUID is defined in the symbols section, right? So that's what identifies the commands. And then the commands element in itself has obviously a few children in here, most notably three groups, buttons, and bitmaps, right? The groups element is used to group related command groups. And in our case, we have only one command group, right? And then each group is tied to a parent menu group. And then what we are saying is, well, I'm adding a new group under the tools menu, right? That's what this is defining. And you have the buttons element, and the buttons element, you can specify the buttons, and you tie a button to a group and a command ID, and then you say that this is part of this parent group. And you also specify an icon, which is a bitmap in this case, defined in here. Okay, so now that we sort of looked at the overall high-level taxonomy of the VSCT file, let us run a demo project to sort of see what's going on. Okay, so we have added a menu command, obviously, and then it does something, which is just throw the dialog box in there. So that's all this guy does. So now let us go back to the slide deck and sort of look at what happened behind the scenes in terms of building this package, basically, right? So we start off with the resource files, the resx files, vspackage.resx and resources.resx. And those are basically processed by resgen.exe to create the .resource files. Then the .vsct file that we looked at is processed by the vsct.exe, which is the command table compiler. And then it generates a .cto file, right? And then that .cto file is added to the vspackage.resource file. And the name of that resource is what we specified in here. And it also has a version that we specified in here, all right? And then the resource file and the source files are processed by the C# compiler to generate the assembly file, right? The assembly file is then processed by the create package def.exe to generate a .package def file. In our case, we can look at the package def file that got created. In here. Right. So it has the package GUID that we looked at. It has the DLL, which contains the functionality. It also has information on the menu resources, where it is located, and that sort of good stuff. So this is what get VS ends up reading and determining whether it needs to rebuild its menu cache or not, right? And then the package def file and the assembly files that were generated are processed by the VSSDK build tasks, and then to generate the V6 package, right? So with that, let us switch to a simple tool window and how easy it is for you to create a tool window as well. And in the process, I'll also try to demo how you could change the state of your commands as well, right? So it created a tool window, and then I'm looking at the event handler for the tool window. I'm going to hack up something by sort of moving this menu command to be a class, to be a member of this class, and then a public member so that I can access it directly. Not a great solution, but sort of something to sort of demo what I'm trying to accomplish here. So I'm going to say, I'm going to keep toggling. I'm going to keep toggling the visibility. Right. The other piece that we also need to do to be able to accomplish that is to change and add a command flag to say that this has needs dynamic visibility, so that you can change it in code. All right. So we did that, and then I'm going to run. And then the tool window was actually added. We didn't get to that, but it was added in here. A menu item was added for getting the tool window, all right? And then you can see that the menu command is visible in here. I am going to make it invisible, make it visible, all right. So we did that. Pretty simple tool window. You can add more stuff as well, but I want to sort of take a moment to talk about basic command handling concepts here. Right, so command, what's a command? Command is a logical entity that represents an action that a user intends to perform. It is backed by code to accomplish the action. Button is a UI to invoke the command. Context is something that represents the state of environment. We have not leveraged that yet in our demos. For instance, certain commands are enabled only in certain contexts. We'll look at context in a moment. An example is step into is enabled only when you're debugging, right? State, we looked at the visibility state. There are other states like enabled, disabled. So a command can have its own state basically, right? And then command target is an entity that knows how to execute a status query and an action associated with the command, right? The command target could execute the action, could reject it or route it to another target. And finally, the action is the code that is executed by a command target when a command is executed on it, right? So with that, let us look at contexts a little bit. So what we are going to do is one final demo before we start wrapping things up. So what we are going to do here is I'm going to add a visibility constraint on a visibility item, right? And I am going to specify the command, and that's a combination of the GUID and then the ID. Right, and then I'm going to specify in what context is it going to be visible. Okay, and what I'm going to do also is I'll go rev this so that it starts so that Visual Studio understands that it needs to update its menus. Okay. Okay. So what we did there was we said that this is this menu should be visible only when there is no solution loaded, and if there is a solution loaded, then don't show it. Yep, no solution loaded, so it shows this thing up. So let's load up a solution and see if that works, and if this guy actually basically disappears from the tools menu. Okay, solutions loaded, not there anymore. So we saw how context is also functional now. So from command visibility, there are different things you could do. We just looked at the no solution. You could also do the empty, like make it visible only when there is empty solution, solution exists. There are a bunch of things that you could do in here in terms of visibility, setting the visibility. Like if make sure that this command is available only when you're running in full screen mode, for example. So looking back, what we have done so far is we looked at V6 and we looked at the V6 manifest and how V6 is actually installed and whatnot, places to look at when you encounter any issues with V6. We looked at MEF, how to leverage it and build MEF-based extensions. We looked at VS packages and the overall architecture of VS package, what does package citing mean. We also looked at the menus and commands, how to associate them. We also, and we just used a few extensions, like built just a simple editor and shell based extensions. And then we uploaded the extension to our extension to gallery and sort of said how easy it is for you to upload your extensions to gallery. What more can you extend? You can do a whole lot of things, like project templates can be customized, are extensible, code snippets, so you can provide your own code snippets, refactoring can be done, debugger visualizers, coding standards and policy enforcers, new language service, modeling tools, solution explorer, tons of things that are extensible in here, and you can go do that. This was just a getting started and tips and tricks for you to get started. A few resources in here. Visual Studio SDK is the place for you to start, and Community Edition is a free version of Visual Studio, which is pretty much on par with Visual Studio Professional. So that's the place where you start if you're building extensions, and some resources on MEF as well for you to go look at. I hope you enjoyed the talk, and happy extension building for Visual Studio. Thank you.